Good evening, everybody. We're watching America First. My name is Nicholas J. Fuentes. We have a great show for you tonight. Very excited to be back with you here tonight on Thursday. We've got some big news, some breaking news tonight. Another episode where we have to talk about something that I don't really care too much about. You know, yesterday and I think the day before, maybe it was on Monday, we had to talk about impeachment. And for the past like 4 or 5 weeks, it's been like impeachment and the United Kingdom elections. And these have been like the two things that have been going on for the past like month that I'm just like dreading. I'm not very interested in them. But of course, now that we have some major developments, like of course, the articles of impeachment, which were revealed yesterday, and now we have the British elections actually taking place tonight. Now we get to talk about them. It's a little bit more eventful. And tonight, our featured story, our main story tonight, is about the British elections, which I believe are taking place right now. I think the polls are closed over in the United Kingdom, but the tabulation is occurring. We don't have the official results in just yet, but we do have exit polling. And I guess in the United Kingdom, the exit polling is very spot on. So we have a general idea of what it's going to look like in the new government after today's elections. It's a huge win for the Conservative Tory Party in the UK. Huge historic defeat for the left-wing Labour Party. We're going to go over the results. We'll go over the exit polling, some of the background, what we can expect in the future. And I also have a very good whiteboard for you tonight. There was one quote that I saw on Twitter, which I actually didn't even put in my notes here. But there's a great quote from one of these British journalists that's been covering the election tonight. And he said something to the effect that, and it's a very key thing, this was the inspiration for the whiteboard. He said that what we can learn from this election happening right now in the UK and what we can learn from Boris Johnson specifically is that it is much easier for conservatives to move left on the economy than it is for left-wing people, for liberals, to move rightward on culture and identity. And that's sort of, I think, the main takeaway from this election. That's the theme. I think that's basically been the theme of American politics, or rather, I think globally, what you can see in politics since Donald Trump got elected, or maybe since Brexit, because that was a few months before that. The rise of national populism, I think, is the main story, the main realignment happening across Europe and the United States. And I think that quote basically describes exactly what is happening, which is that I think the conservatives, the right-wing people in the world, in America, in the United Kingdom, they are hardening, they're consolidating in terms of being right-wing on culture and identity, and they are drifting leftward on the economy. Maybe they're not left-wing per se on economics, but they're certainly more left-wing than Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher, right? Conversely, you see that the left is consolidating around left-wing culture, left-wing identity issues, but they don't seem to be moving anywhere on economics or any of the other issues. So we're going to talk about that. That'll be our main story. Like I said, I've got a whiteboard. I can't even remember the last time I did a whiteboard. I think it must have been during Groyper Wars. I'm not sure exactly which one it was. Maybe it was when I declared victory. I think we had a list of all the different events that we went to and the dates and everything. I think that was the last one. So it's been some time. It's been a few weeks. It's exciting to get the whiteboard out. We'll also be talking about a potential trade deal, between the United States and China, which is anticipated to be signed tomorrow. We'll go over this a little bit. It's not a huge deal. It's not like the trade deal between the U.S. and China that will solve all the problems with trade between the two countries, but it's sort of like a truce. If you've been following the trade war, I believe it is on December 15th that there was supposed to be a major hike and expansion of American tariffs on Chinese goods. We were going to expand our tariffs to cover $150 billion worth of more goods, and this would target specifically everyday consumer items like electronics and other kinds of things like that. So it'd be pretty severe sanctions. We would be at the high watermark, I think, that's even possible for sanctions on Chinese goods. I believe it would be all the goods we're getting from China would be subject to tariffs if that went into place on the 15th, next week. But they are close to reaching a deal, according to the president. That would be a very short-term temporary thing that would stop the rise in tariffs So we'll talk a little bit about that. Not a huge deal, but something to keep an eye on with trade because we haven't talked about that in a while. And we have a pretty good show for you. It's going to be high energy, going to be exciting. You know, I don't love to talk about things that happen outside the United States, but I do think it has a lot of relevance for what's happening in the world and also, in some sense, what's happening in America. Of course, we can trace what's happening in the United Kingdom. You could see a lot of parallels with what's happening in the United States. The most obvious example would be Brexit in 2016 and Donald Trump in 2016, maybe the stagnation of Brexit since then. Donald Trump has been stagnant since then as well. So I think there are definitely parallels, and we can kind of see, based on this election, maybe some foreshadowing for 2020. So that's why I think it's relevant to talk about on America First. But normally, don't really care so much about the Anglo world. But before we dive into all of that, I do just want to talk very briefly. I just have to bring this up because I know we talked about it on Tuesday, the anti-Semitism executive order. We talked about this, like I said, on Tuesday. I think that was our main story, which is that, and I believe it was signed yesterday, the president signed an executive order that expands the definition of Judaism in America. They're now reinterpreting Judaism not merely as a religion, but also as a nationality. And the Trump administration is doing that with an executive order so that they could use certain legal provisions to go after colleges for not sufficiently protecting Israel's interests, basically. They couldn't go after college campuses for discriminating against Jews if they were religious, but if they reinterpret Judaism as a nationality and they interpret Judaism as inherently Israeli, well, then they can go after college campuses for not shutting down BDS and Palestinian rights and stuff like that. So we talked about that a lot on Tuesday, but, you know, I just have to talk about what's gone on since then. I don't know if you guys saw, there was a big signing ceremony for this executive order yesterday. And again, I read an article from the New York Times about this executive order on Tuesday, and I said at some point, you know, I'm not reading from the Daily Stormer. For what it's worth, when we talk about the lengths that this administration goes to target anti-Semitism and to elevate and promote Zionists and Jews, it's not parody. It's not, I mean, because you could certainly see how it could be. It seems so extreme. It seems so absurd and almost surreal that it's hard to believe sometimes that you're actually reading the news and you're not reading anti-Semitic tropes from, you know, neo-Nazis or whatever, right? Because I saw the signing ceremony yesterday and it had everything. There was a young kid there with a Make America Great Again yarmulke on. And Donald Trump at one point says, oh, you got a Make America Great Again yarmulke? I like that. I need one of those for myself. I saw a clip today where Mark Levin, popular talk radio host, he came up and said a few words. He said that Donald Trump is the first Jewish president. And then he gestured over to Donald Trump and did a smirk. I thought that was very charming. He tweeted the other day, the president tweeted yesterday, a number of different polls showing that Orthodox Jews support him at something like 90%, 95%. And it gets to a certain point where it's like, you know what? It's a little much. It's a little much for me. I think my threshold for that being excessive was probably crossed a long time ago. But I feel like probably for even normal people, at a certain point, don't you have to raise an eyebrow and say, okay, what's going on here? Because I feel like, and I know I've said this before, but it's so true. Every time I talk to like mainstream people, specifically about the Groiper Wars or just generally about, you know, my views to kind of clash with mainstream conservatism, the question is always, why are you obsessed? Why are you hung up? Why do you care so much, for example, about foreign aid to Israel? Or, you know, why do you talk about Jewish overrepresentation in media or something like this? Can you see why? Are you beginning to understand? And moreover, do you understand where the real obsession lies? Who really has the fixation here? Because it's not us. It's not me. You know, this show is called America First. I care about America. But it's hard to ignore every single day. And the yarmulkes and the polls and all the rest. I mean, is it just me? Am I going insane? I don't understand. Because I saw that signing ceremony today. And I saw Mark Levin say, we've got our first Jewish president. And I said, this is terrible. No, I thought Donald Trump was a Christian president. I thought he was Christian because this is a Christian country. And he's supposed to be America first and wants to make America great again and so on. And Judaism is not Christianity. It's not even close. In fact, you could say it's possibly the opposite. Some might say that while Judaism and Christianity are actually very close, or they might use a phrase, Judeo-Christianity. And in some sense, there's some truth in this. You know, obviously, in some capacity, Jewish people, I think maybe some of them are left, they believe that the Torah is a holy book. A lot of them, it's more the Talmud, or it's like Holocaust remembrance are the main religious convictions. But I think for some of them, it still is the Torah, right? Which is, you know, some of the Old Testament. And obviously, the Christians have the Old Testament, and we also have the New Testament. But of course, as I said, I think I said this last week, so I know we're kind of going over the same thing, but it's worth repeating. Remember what distinguishes Jews from Christians. You can read it in the gospel. They reject Jesus Christ. And they don't just not believe in Jesus Christ. They think he was real, but he was a rebel. Like Ben Shapiro said, a rebel got killed for his trouble. All of this is to say, when I see Mark Levin get up there smirking, and you've got a Make America Great Again yarmulke, and he says, yeah, Donald Trump's the first Jewish president, I'm thinking, no, he's not the first Jewish president. Maybe he is. You know, you look at Jared Kushner, who's running this administration, he might as well be. But that's not what I voted for. That's not good. That's bad, right? I want a Christian president for a Christian nation. I don't want a president that rejects Jesus Christ. And there's a difference, and it matters. You know, and this comes after just last week when he said, what did he say at some Zionist, you know, Israel fundraiser? He said, the problem in this country is that people don't love Israel enough. That's almost verbatim what he said. It's beyond parody at this point. So that has to be acknowledged. Somebody has to say something, because conservatives who say they're America first, or say they're pro-Christianity, or say they're nationalists or whatever, they seem to be very, very quiet about this. Or in some cases, they're very loud and vocal in support of Israel. But you can't have it both ways. Don't you understand? Can't have it both ways. You either love America and you want to put America first, and America's a Christian nation and you're Christian, or you don't, or none of that is true. And you want to put Israel first and you want a Jewish president and so on. But you have to understand these things clash. That's a point I want to drive home, because a lot of people think we could just have it always, and we could have this Judeo-Christian alliance, and we could have American nationalism and hardcore, full-throated Zionism. You can't. You can't. They don't work. It's like oil and water. They separate, right? What did Bret Stephens say in the New York Times? Israel is not safe in a world of America first. I couldn't say it any better myself. Bret Stephens also said years ago that Jews do so well under a liberal internationalist system. Well, I'm not a liberal internationalist. I'm a conservative nationalist. So that has to be called out. People think we could have this sort of uneasy, uncomfortable alliance. We cannot. Sooner or later, we will find out that these differences are irreconcilable and the two positions are mutually exclusive. People think we could pretend, we could just sort of sew them together or something. Can't be done. And this is proof. This is proof why it cannot be done. Because it's not a good look to be at the Zionist fundraiser saying we need to love Israel more, and then to be at this thing saying I'm a Jewish president, I want to wear a yarmulke. Sorry, I want to put America first. We need to love America, and we need a Christian president. And that's the way it has to be. But anyway, I noticed that. I would be remiss if I didn't address that, because I've been putting it out on Twitter. And I obviously addressed it a little bit. I addressed it as the main story on Tuesday, but we saw the signing ceremony yesterday, and there were some egregious things there that had to be called out. So there's that. The other thing I want to say before we fully dive in is just have to briefly talk about this time, people of the year thing that's been going on. I may talk about it more tomorrow. Honestly, my plans for what to talk about on the show keep getting roiled or upset because things keep happening. You know, I was planning tonight to talk about that shooting on that Air Force base by that Saudi, but then we have the British elections. We've got a trade deal, you know, so we're going to have to push that back maybe tomorrow again, and maybe we'll do a bigger thing on Time Person of the Year tomorrow. But I don't know if you've seen this, but Time's Person of the Year for 2019 is... what is it, Greta? I've been told it's pronounced Thunberg, but spelled Thunberg, we all know. She's Time's Person of the Year. And that was, you know, kind of to be expected. They've been doing this kind of gay stuff for years where they pick a little girl. I'm so sick of, like, the little girl icons, like Malala and Greta Thunberg. And I don't know, I'd probably be hard-pressed to think of a third example, but you know the sort of archetype that the United Nations types like bow and worship over. A little girl who's sticking it to the man, you know, a little girl like Malala standing up to the Taliban, a little girl like Greta Thunberg standing up to big oil. It's like little girls can't stand up to anything. They're little girls. You know, women can hardly stand up to anything, let alone when they're, you know, juveniles, let alone when they're children. And I don't know, I have to say for the terms of service, I don't mean that in a sexist way, but I mean, let's get real. You've got somebody who has not even become an adult yet. What are they meaningfully going to do to take on big oil? I mean, this thing with Greta Thunberg is about the most astroturf thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Where did this person even come from? You know, it was like one day you had never heard of her, and the next day she was the biggest thing in the world. One day I had never heard of her, never seen her face, and the next day it was an international, the biggest protest in the history of the world, climate protest on five continents. And she's at the whatever, you know, she's meeting Barack Obama, she's at the UN, right? I mean, does anybody feel the same way? But so anyway, I saw that one and I was like, it's not surprising. This system worships the femoid. It worships the little girl that stands up. We know this at this point. We live in a very matriarchal system. But what was much more odious to me was the entertainer of the year. I don't know if you saw this one. They picked as their entertainer of the year this artist known as Lizzo, who is, again, the terms of service, oh, community guidelines are so restrictive. I might have to do a stream about it on DLive, for Christ's sake, because I can't even talk about it on this show. I don't know if you saw it, but the community guidelines, they say you can't make fun of somebody based on like physical characteristics or race or religion or whatever. So anyway, look up a picture of Lizzo. Needless to say, maybe you could draw your own conclusions. And I see that, and it's just like, she wasn't even like a good entertainer this year. She had one big single. She performed at the VMAs. You know, I guess she had a couple of like big performances. So all of this is to say, I don't think she got picked as entertainer of the year, obviously because she's a great entertainer or a great artist, but it's because she's a big fat black woman. I mean, and that's, we all know that. And it seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, that the people now that are being elevated more than anybody else, because leftism has gone so far and even past like white feminism and affluent white liberals and so on, affluent white liberal females, is not just black women, not just women of color, but women of color that also have like another thing going on. Do you know what I mean? Like at that Democratic LGBT forum, you had a black female transsexual who got up on the microphone and made a big scene and said, oh, you don't care about black trans women of color. That's like, that's the most, you know, that's the most you could be. That's the most extreme, like diverse person you could be. Or Lizzo, you know, not just a woman of color, but she's got to be huge. She's got to be morbidly obese, you know. So I saw that. It's obviously political. And you just got to think, what conclusions can we draw from the people they're elevating? What conclusion can we draw about their values, what they're trying to promote, when this is their person of the year? And it's obviously not about them being an entertainer, but they've selected Lizzo because of what she looks like and so on. What they're trying to promote is something that we can say objectively is not pretty. We could say, and I don't mean like Lizzo's not pretty, which I don't believe she is, but I'm saying what they are promoting, broadly speaking, is things that are ugly. They are promoting things that are offensive to look at. I mean, they're promoting things that are against the natural order. We know as conservatives, something that is so fundamental, or I should say as right-wing people, that beauty is objective. We talk about art, we talk about performances. You think about classical performances, classical music, it is things that are beautiful. It is things that are objectively ordered, right? You know, and you could look at Mozart and there's mathematics, there's maybe something transcendent about them. But we know that there is something, and it might be hard to articulate, probably not so much in a religious context. I think that makes it easier to, in other words, to interpret it in a religious context. But we know that there is an aesthetic emotion inside of us that we can recognize a beautiful sculpture, a beautiful painting, a song, a cathedral, something like this. And that's what we represent. And the left represents Lizzo, or is represented by Lizzo, and represented by you know, what's that famous guy who says, how dare you, that transsexual guy in the wheelchair, or, you know, the one at the LGBT forum, I forget what her name was, Blossom, right? Remember that one? When this individual got up and started screaming about, wow, black, trans, people of color, whatever. So to me, I think that is a very important point to make, but maybe more on that tomorrow, maybe not. You know, as I started riffing about that, I realized just how restrictive the community guidelines are. I don't even know how much of what I just said is even acceptable. They changed the community guidelines on YouTube that it's considered harassment if you make fun of somebody based on physical characteristics. Seriously? So like what? You can't call somebody short, tall, dumb, ugly. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. But anyway, that's time. That's Donald Trump. That's the world we live in. We live in a world where Lizzo is the person of the year, and we've got the first Jewish president who thinks we should love Israel more. I'm loving it. I'm loving life. But we're going to move on. We're going to talk about the China trade deal here, and I don't want to spend too much time on it because, like I said, not a huge deal. But this is from BBC. It kind of explains what we're talking about. It says, the U.S. and China are close to signing a trade deal that averts another round of tariffs due to start on Sunday. The deal could be announced as soon as Friday after U.S. President Donald Trump reportedly signed off on the terms. The U.S. has agreed to remove some tariffs as part of the agreement. In exchange, China would boost purchases of U.S. farm goods. Many of the more difficult issues are still to be addressed, but the progress sent U.S. share markets to record highs, according to the Chamber of Commerce head of international affairs, Myron Brilliant. This person said, quote, it's a good starting point. A deal would deliver a victory to Mr. Trump, who is under political pressure with debate on his impeachment underway in the U.S. Congress. He tweeted earlier on Thursday that the U.S. and China were very close to an agreement. He said, quote, they want it and so do we. The U.S. reportedly offered to have tariff rates on about $350 billion worth of Chinese goods, some of which had climbed as high as 25%. Offered to have tariff rates on about $350 billion worth of Chinese goods. However, the deal is not expected to address many of the more difficult issues that triggered the fight, like China's subsidies for certain industries. As described, the potential agreement falls short of what the U.S. initially said were its goals, said Jennifer Hillman, a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations and a former trade official. She wrote on Twitter, quote, this should not be described as a trade agreement. It is a purchase and sale agreement that does virtually nothing to address substantive concerns of the U.S. with China's trade practices. Mr. Trump has repeatedly declared progress toward a deal that would end the trade war, which has seen tariffs imposed on more than $450 billion worth of U.S.-China trade and weighed on the global economy. In October, he announced that the two sides had agreed to terms for a Phase 1 deal, but negotiations dragged on. Without progress, the U.S. had threatened to impose tariffs on more than $150 billion worth of Chinese exports on December 15th. So that's why they're coming up with an intermediary deal. Is basically the clock runs out on Sunday, where we would put tariffs on an additional $150 billion worth of Chinese goods. And I have to tell you, you know, my position on the trade war all along has been there's really no need for an agreement. Honestly, everybody, when they talk about trade, is fixated on this idea of this grand bargain, grand deal between the United States and China that's going to address all these so-called substantive concerns. And the Council on Foreign Relations and the Chamber of Commerce have said that this deal does not constitute, properly described, a trade deal. It constitutes, what did she say? It is a sale agreement, a purchase and sale agreement, where in this temporary deal, we reduce tariffs and China buys more farm products. But, you know, to me, it's like, China's never going to address these substantive, so-called substantive concerns that we have with their system. They're never going to address that. I mean, there's no deal, I don't think, where they're going to agree to stop subsidizing industries like artificial intelligence and quantum computing and, you know, other technological sectors, things like that, computer chips. It's not going to happen. Why would they do that? Why would they willingly and voluntarily give up making their industries more competitive against the United States? Industries that are the industries of the future that will determine supremacy and primacy in military, in other applications, in space, in the economy. There's simply no reason for them to do that. You look at other kinds of non-tariff trade barriers or simply tariff trade barriers. You know, look at what China does to our manufacturing. We'll send people over there to build plants or to build factories. They'll have their people work at the factories, learn the know-how, and then they build their own factories and they produce the same goods. And it's like that expertise, that kind of human capital, that kind of intellectual stuff that is so important that isn't accounted for in tariffs. Why would they stop doing things like that? Why would they stop stealing our intellectual property? It makes no sense. The policy of China for 30 years has been ruthlessly trying to overtake the U.S. economy, not simply in size, but also in sophistication. Also in terms of economy, fostering, like I said, these infant industries that they have of the future. There's no reason for them to stop. Moreover, even if they agreed to stop, what are the mechanisms by which we can enforce something like this? Are we going to have inspectors going into China's economy and seeing if they're upholding their end of the bargain? Who's going to enforce this? The World Trade Organization, the UN, the government? It's not going to happen. You know, so to me, I see the trade relationship with China and the United States, and everybody's fixated on a big deal where China's going to come to the table and they're going to stop being naughty. They're going to stop with the currency manipulation and the IP theft, and they're going to stop with everything else. And what are we going to do in return? We're going to eliminate all our tariffs. We're going to go back to the way things were. If we go back to the way things were, we will continue to bleed capital. We'll continue to bleed wealth. We'll continue to lose in the currency exchange market. It makes no sense. So to me, I actually look at what we have going on right now, and I think it's an improvement. You know, a vicious and hot trade war that's going on, we're putting huge tariffs on almost all Chinese goods. Why should the tariffs come down? Why should the tariffs come off? If they're making American industry more competitive, or if it's hurting China's economy and it's forcing manufacturers, even if they don't come back to the United States, if they go to Vietnam or if they go to Cambodia or Taiwan or, you know, another country, why is that not beneficial for us? In the short term, we might suffer a little bit in terms of economic growth. But all the studies have shown that whatever we are hurt by doing the tariffs, it's marginal, it's minimal compared to the gain that we have from shutting down China and more broadly from making our own manufacturing, our own economy competitive again. So I see this constant, and I think Trump probably knows this, I think his negotiators know this, but I see the constant pressure, or at least the buzz from the media talking about the big deal, and I'm just thinking, what's the rush? The right approach is to keep the tariffs in place, or even if there is some kind of a deal, don't eliminate the tariffs altogether, maybe bring them down to a level that is manageable, but certainly I think they should remain. Certainly I think we should use fire to fight fire. If China's going to use these illicit or unethical practices, why should we not adopt the exact same thing? Doesn't make any sense to me why we wouldn't. You know, we can't have a fair fight, so let's have a dirty fight and just participate in it. So I see that China trade deal. Like I said, not a huge deal, not like huge groundbreaking news, but it's worth reminding on the trade war because it's been a long time since we talked about it. I think probably the last show I did about it was over the summer, that the good news is we're still at war with China in terms of trade. The bad news is, why do we seem to be capitulating? Why every time do we threaten tariffs, do we have to undercut our own position? You know, it's just like in June, if you remember back, I think it was late May, early June, the president threatened huge tariffs on Mexico if they didn't stop immigration into the United States. He said, we're going to put, I think it was like a 10% tariff on everything coming across the border from Mexico, and it'll increase to 25% potentially by October. This is what he said back in May or June. I don't remember exactly the date. And it was like the weekend before the tariffs were supposed to go into place. He made a handshake deal with the Mexican government to avert the tariff, to avert the tariffs from going into effect, and to have Mexico have some kind of half-ass measures put in place to reduce immigration. Ultimately, it seemed like the immigration countermeasures worked to some extent, but why not let them feel the pain? Why not put a little pressure on Mexico like that? Why not remind these other countries that we're the most powerful country in the world and they couldn't exist without us? Because for decades, I feel like China's been pressuring us, and Mexico's been pressuring us, and Canada's been abusing us, and the European Union's been taking advantage of us. And what do? We just take it? It doesn't make any sense. If we actually stood up to them, and, you know, even before they gave concessions, even if they gave concessions and just made them feel the pain for a little while, it would totally change the dynamic. You know, for example, with the European Union, if we stopped funding NATO for like a year or for like 6 months, and that would probably be catastrophic geopolitically if it was a year, but you know what I'm saying. If we let the budget lapse for a little while, just long enough to let people start to panic, just long enough for people to start to feel the pain or feel threatened by Russia or something like that, the attitude would change overnight. You know, we go to these NATO summits and they laugh at us. Well, let's stop funding NATO for a month. What's the worst that could happen? Is Russia going to invade the Baltic states because we let funding lapse for NATO for a month? I don't think so. You know, the same with Canada and Mexico. Let's put punishing tariffs on them so that Canada starts to buy dairy from us and farming products. Let's put tariffs on Mexico just on account of. Let's put tariffs on China and let's let everybody feel the pain long enough where the attitude starts to change. So at least that's my position on it. Broadly speaking, that's what has to happen. But we keep trying to, we want to just revert back to the status quo. Everybody, I think, the attitude is always, we have to make a deal, we have to sort things out, we have to smooth things over, bring people together. Let's keep people apart for a little while, let's make it hurt for everybody for a little while, and then maybe we'll get, you know, a better status quo. But anyway, that's China. Like I said, not a big deal, but worth talking about. The big story tonight, the big feature is about the United Kingdom elections, which I have not been covering on this show. I find it boring. British politics for the past 3 years has been really dumb. You know, they passed Brexit, and the conversation over a number of different elections, you know, Theresa May has come and gone. It was actually, who was it? David Cameron, who was the prime minister when the Brexit vote happened. So he stepped down, we got Theresa May, Theresa May got out, now we got Boris Johnson. You know, so over three prime ministers, years, elections, and politicking and so on. And it seems to me that up until Boris Johnson got into office, they were no closer to a Brexit deal than they had been when we started, or when they started over there. It seems to me that the conversation has orbited around that topic in the same amount of time. So to me, it's just very mundane and boring. I check in almost every day on BBC and it's, you know, Brexit is ground to a halt. You know, what else is new? Brexit elections. Oh, another one, right? But we actually do have a pretty eventful outcome for tonight's elections. It looks like the Conservative Tories, led by Boris Johnson, are coming away with an historic victory. We only have the exit polls. We don't have the official tally just yet. But this is what BBC says about the outcome. It says, quote, "The Conservatives are set to win an overall majority of 86 in the general election, according to an exit poll for BBC, ITV, and Sky News. The survey taken at UK polling stations suggests the Tories will get 368 members of parliament, 50 more than at the 2017 election, when all the results have been counted. Labour would get 191 seats, the Liberal Democrats 13, the Brexit Party none, and the SNP 55 seats. In one of the first seats to declare, the Conservatives took Blythe Valley in northeast England from Labour. This is the first time the former mining area, which voted leave in the EU referendum, will have a Conservative member of parliament who is an NHS worker named Ian Levy. The handful of results so far were broadly in line with the exit poll, which was conducted by Ipsos Mori at 144 polling stations with 22,790 interviews, according to polling expert John Curtis. Labour's vote is predicted to be nearly 12% down on the 2017 general election, with the Conservatives up by 2.5% and smaller parties having a good night as well. And the British pound also surged against the dollar as a result of the outcome. So basically, it's a lot of Anglo-European, a lot of nonsense there. So they've got their parliament. It looks like the Tories are going to have 368 seats. They'll have a majority by 86 seats. I think the number for a majority is like 314, somewhere around there, to have an absolute majority. And from what I've seen, this is the biggest majority that any party has had since 2001, when it was Blair. And this is the biggest majority that Conservatives have had in the United Kingdom since Margaret Thatcher. So it's a pretty historic day. Not only an historic victory for the Conservatives, but also an historic defeat for Labour. According to the exit polls, if everything is correct, if everything is sorted out at the end of this, this will have been the worst performance by Labour since 1935. So historic victory for the right, historic defeat for the left. And that, again, is if the exit polling is basically accurate, which it looks like it is. And to me, the story of this election is a story about the realignment in 2016. And it's also about, I think, what's happening in America. So a little bit of background about what's been happening in the United Kingdom. Like I said, the Brexit referendum passed over the summer in 2016, and it hasn't been delivered. Conservatives suffered electorally for years because they didn't deliver a Brexit. Theresa May ultimately left. You know, she had to resign. Actually, I think she lost a vote of no confidence and then resigned. I forget exactly the technical details, but she was basically forced out of office because she could not deliver a Brexit deal. And it's a very complicated deal, of course. They have to negotiate not just within the British Parliament, but also with the European Union Parliament. And so to have that level of bureaucratic gridlock at both the continental level and the national level, that's why they're struggling to find an agreement that works for both parties. Theresa May couldn't do it. She could not, in other words, fulfill the mandate that was given to the government by the people in 2016, so she lost. Boris Johnson got into office, and he has worked very quickly to get a Brexit deal together. He has promised to get a Brexit deal done by January 31st, 2020, and as a result of that, he has succeeded. So do you see where maybe this has some parallels with the United States? Theresa May lost the vote of no confidence. She got ousted from the party, was wildly unpopular because of gridlock, and because gridlock would not allow her government to fulfill the mandate that the voters gave to the government in 2016. In other words, the voters said in 2016, we want out of the European Union. They have not been able to fulfill that. That has made conservatives unpopular up until Boris Johnson. He comes in, speeds things along. It looks like they're going to get a Brexit deal in this time frame. You know, he said he promised a deal by October, wasn't able to cut it exactly, but they're very close. He campaigned on getting it done by January 31st. He now has the biggest majority since Tony Blair in 2001 and the biggest majority for conservatives since Margaret Thatcher. Why? Because he's going to follow through on the mandate. To me, the obvious striking parallel with that is with Donald Trump. Now, I don't know if it'll be exactly one-to-one, because the demographics are different in the United Kingdom and the United States. The electoral system is very different. They've got a first, well, I think, what do we have? We have a first past the post. I forget exactly all the political science language. I've been in college in a long time. But, you know, they've got a parliamentary system over there. We've got an electoral federal system over here where, you know, we have battleground states and they've got, you know, members of parliament. So it's a little bit different. We directly elect our president. They elect their prime minister by electing their party in the different places. So it's not a perfect one-to-one analogy, but I think the principle is the same, which is to say that in the same way that the voters in the United Kingdom voted for Brexit in 2016, which was a radical change, a radical challenge to the status quo, which was in place and was in motion for probably like 60 or 50 years, depending on how far you go back in Europe, the trend towards a European super state or some kind of supranational organization in Europe had been in the works since the European Coal and Steel Community or some of these, you know, European economic zones, depending on how far you want to go back. So they bucked something like a 60-year trend towards integrating all the European countries into some kind of super state or something looking something like that. Whereas in America, the voters in 2016 did something very similar. They bucked the 30-year trend towards globalism, which is analogous towards this trend towards a supranational European superstate. They bucked the trend of neoliberalism, neoconservatism, the sort of left-right gridlock and mainstream status quo that had been dominant for 30 years. They also gave a mandate to the president to do very tangible things like build the wall, stop illegal immigration, get us out of foreign wars, fix trade. You know, these were very tangible things in the same way that in the United Kingdom you had a withdrawal from Brexit. They're tangible. They represent a broader trend of bucking the status quo. I think I've established that point. And so if we could see that in the United Kingdom, a leader who says they're going to fulfill the mandate of 2016, and maybe voters are frustrated with the Labour Party, the opposition party, shutting down that mandate and causing partisan political gridlock, could we say that if the same forces are at work in both countries, that the analogy in America in 2020 is that voters will rise up against the Democratic Party, the opposition party in America, that has caused gridlock, that has shut down the government, prevented the mandate from 2016 from being fulfilled? The difference to me is that in the United Kingdom, you had a change in leadership, you know, in the sense that you had Theresa May that tried to get the Brexit done and failed, And then you had Boris Johnson, who seemed to be more competent and somebody who voters had confidence could carry out the Brexit. In the United States, we just had Donald Trump. And Donald Trump has clearly, in a lot of ways, failed at executing the mandate of 2016. So that's where it gets a little dicey. Will Donald Trump have the outcome of Theresa May? I think that would probably be more apropos, that Theresa May failed to carry out the mandate from the election in the same way that Donald Trump up until this point has. Or could Donald Trump, like Boris Johnson, has transformed the equation in the last so many months? I think Theresa May resigned in May, so he's had something like 7 months. You know, if Boris Johnson could take a stalled, stagnant, gridlock government and move forward with Brexit in 7 months, could we see something similar from Donald Trump, that he goes from, you know, what could be an analogous, the first half of this term is his Theresa May segment, and then maybe in the next year he works really hard, he gets a lot of stuff done. It's like Boris Johnson getting Brexit together. Do you understand how the two leadership, the two leaders in the Conservative Party in the United Kingdom could be analogous to two parts of Donald Trump's reign in his first term? That, of course, would be contingent on Trump getting his act together, building the wall, deporting illegals, pulling us out of the war, and so on. But to me, that's basically how you could sort of compare and contrast on a very surface level what's happening in the UK with what's happening in the United States. If Donald Trump cleans it up, builds a wall, and so on, he could win in a landslide in 2020. You know, some have been saying that not only is the Midwest back in play in 2020, and a lot of the states that Donald Trump flipped in 2016, they'll be back in play in the next election, but possibly more states could be in play. States like Minnesota, possibly Maine, you know, some of the other states. So the question is, if Donald Trump gets it together, he could win a big landslide like Boris Johnson. If he doesn't get it together, he could end up like Theresa May and lose ground after 2016 in 2020. So to me, that's where the comparison between them starts and stops on a partisan level. But beyond that, I think it's very important to talk about what's happening, looking at the bigger picture. If you look at which voters delivered this result for Boris Johnson, it was largely white voters who had voted Labour their entire life, middle class and working class Labour voters, who went over to the Conservative Tory Party because of Brexit and predominantly because of cultural issues. You know, I mentioned in this article from BBC, one of the, what do they call them, provinces? I don't know exactly what they call, what they call the subdivisions, but in this article it says that Blythe Valley went from Labour to Conservative. And everybody said that this was a big deal. Now, obviously, I'm not familiar with the nitty-gritty of UK politics of the different, you know, the different places and cities and towns and things like that. But the reason why they said this one was so consequential is because this is a blue-collar, working-class, white district, or again, I don't know if they're called counties or whatever, in the United Kingdom, Blythe Valley, that for decades went Labour and for the first time went Conservative. Now, what does that tell you? It tells you that a political realignment is happening. This happens many times in democracies when voters who go one way for a long time, and you might talk about like the black vote or certain constituencies that go a certain way for a long time because of changing circumstances in the country or changing parties, they will then evolve and move over reliably to the other side. So if we see that the working class British people, and I mean British like ethnically English or Scottish or whatever, if they are moving from Labour to the Conservative side, well, this is largely representative of what's happening across the world, which is to say that older, more socially conservative people that might have been left-wing on economics are finding that they don't have a home in left-wing parties anymore. You see the same thing happening in this election that you saw in the election in 2016 in America. In the same way that a lot of blue dog Democrats, right, or older, working-class, white, socially conservative Democrats said, we don't like Hillary Clinton, we're going to vote for Donald Trump. For the first time ever, we're going to vote for the GOP because Donald Trump is going to protect working class people and going to protect American identity on some level. Maybe it's implicit. Donald Trump is going to oppose foreign wars and so on. In the same way, you could see this happening in the United Kingdom where working class people are saying, you know, this party of Jeremy Corbyn, this hardcore left-wing Labour Party from London does not represent our interests. You could see where there's parallels happening, not just in the UK and the United States, but all across the world. And I'll show you what I mean by that, what's happening sort of ideologically in the country. We've got a whiteboard for you, and this is something which I just dropped my pointer, but I have another one over here. This is a graph which I've seen a lot on social media since Donald Trump got elected, and this is not a perfect, it's basically the same. People have talked about this little graph a lot, like I said, for the past few years. I would say maybe since like Donald Trump got elected, maybe a little bit after, to sort of describe what's happening in American politics. And like I said, it's not exactly what you might have seen, but it's pretty close to it. We've got two axes here to describe political ideology, political movements. We've got an economic axis, and we've got a cultural and identity axis. This is different, by the way, from a political compass. A political compass, I believe the x-axis is economic, and the vertical axis is like, I don't actually know what it is on the political compass. It's like size of government, I think, or something like that. But anyway, this is different than that. So we've got the cultural identity axis. This is things like, you talk about social issues like abortion, or you talk about gun rights or immigration, pretty self-explanatory. The vertical axis is economic. We've got the cultural right, the cultural left, the economic, sort of counterintuitive because it's vertical, but the economic right, the economic left. Obviously, economic right is free market, liberalization, laissez-faire, that kind of thing. Economic left is socialism, government control, and so on. And so I've charted out basically some of the ideologies that define these quadrants and also where different parties and people would land on this chart. So I would say that in the top left axis, we'll go clockwise, I guess, we've got neoliberalism. So an ideology that is left-wing culturally and in terms of identity, but right-wing in economics describes neoliberalism. I would say the Turning Point USA is pretty representative of that. This is an ideology that says, for example, that we can globalize the population. In other words, we can have mass demographic change, mass cultural changes to our country, and that's okay. This is where we hear Ben Shapiro say, "I don't give a damn about the Browning of America." This is where people say that, as long as people come here and assimilate, or maybe in some cases, even if they don't, diversity is enriching our nation, it's making us strong, so long as we maintain a free market. So long as these changes are good for the economy, they're good for us. That describes neoliberalism. That is, I think, best defined by Turning Point USA and Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk, for example, who says that we can have basically unlimited legal immigration, we can staple green cards to diplomas, we can have a left-wing culture, we can trend left-wing in culture and in terms of national identity, so long as we maintain a free market, so long as we maintain low taxes, low regulations, you get the picture. In this quadrant, we have conservatism. It's economically right, it is culturally, and in terms of identity, right-wing. And I'm using this somewhat loosely. Obviously, we know that the Conservative Party hasn't really been very right-wing in terms of culture and identity. They're very much nominally right-wing in terms of culture and identity. In other words, they say they are in name only. So traditionally, Republicans will talk about defending Christian values and defending the American way of life and that kind of thing. On a very nominal level, you could have the GOP in this quadrant as the conservatives, the mainstream conservatives. I think Trump is probably the best fit, though, because here's a politician who is obviously hardcore right-wing on economics, and I'm using these terms sort of in their vernacular. I think a real right-wing economics isn't necessarily hyper-capitalist, but that's the vernacular. I think that's sort of the connotation it has today, that right-wing is towards free market, left-wing is towards big government. So these terms are all a little bit subjective. Trump is obviously very much a free market guy, the tax cuts, the deregulation, greenlighting the oil projects and so on. He's a little bit more economically left than his predecessors like Reagan and Bush and others because he has tariffs and wants an infrastructure project and so on. But in practice, almost all of it's been very much indistinguishable from Turning Point USA. But unlike Turning Point USA, at least in the rhetoric, Trump has been, in terms of culture and identity, right wing. Make America great again, America first, Muslim ban, people are drinking drugs, crime and rapists, shithole countries. All this kind of stuff is, at the very least, implicitly, if not explicitly, culturally right-wing. And it's worth reminding people, or it's worth acknowledging that Trump is in a different quadrant from Turning Point USA. These two ideologies are obviously vastly different in terms of their electoral viability. A neoliberal platform doesn't work. Mitt Romney ran as a neoliberal, and he lost. Marco Rubio ran as a neoliberal, and he lost. Jeb Bush ran as a neoliberal, and he lost. Charlie Kirk and Turning Point USA initially didn't support Trump because they are left-wing on culture and, you know, ostensibly right-wing, nominally right-wing on economics. Trump, in practice, is both of these things, right-wing on economics and right-wing on culture, and this is how he won the election. He went from Marco Rubio, Turning Point USA, mainstream conservative, neoliberal identity or ideology, and he shifted us rightward on culture, I think, and that was the defining thing that made Trump different, that distinguished him, by saying we're going to ban Muslims and we're going to make America great again and so on. And he said we're going to be a party that's right-wing in both ways. On this I'll save this quadrant for last. We'll kind of go out of order here. The bottom left quadrant, we all know it's progressivism. Left-wing on culture and identity, you know what that means. Left-wing on economics, they're socialist. You've got progressive, you've got Democrats. This is Bernie Sanders, this is Elizabeth Warren. These are people that are in favor of, you know, transgender abortions and people that are in favor of mass immigration and think we should all learn Spanish. And they also believe that, you know, the tax rate should be 90% if you earn more than $1 million, and they want a wealth tax and so on. So this one's not really tough to explain. This is the quadrant that, in my opinion, will define the next century, which is populism. You've got an ideology that is right-wing on culture and identity. You could say it's nationalistic, but it is, in some sense, left-wing on economics. Maybe it's not outright socialist, maybe it's not outright communist or big government, but certainly it is trending leftward on economics compared to full-on neoliberalism or traditional Republican free market Reaganite bullshit. You've got somebody like Tucker Carlson on this side, somebody that says it is important that we maintain the character of the nation. And maybe they're not even left-wing economically, but they're just right along the x-axis. Maybe they're a little bit right-wing or a little bit left-wing. But fundamentally, this sort of economic axis that is up and down doesn't really even matter, so long as we are all the way on this side on culture and identity. So somebody that says, well, you know, maybe we support private property, which is an economically right-wing belief. Maybe we support deregulation and something like that, localism. But, you know, we also support people getting taken care of. We also support maybe there's a baseline level of catastrophic health insurance. Maybe there's a big infrastructure project. Maybe there's some kind of stimulus. Maybe we protect the economy. We stall technology, protect workers. This is where we have the most room to grow, is by moving from, you know, maybe up here. I think the movement that needs to happen is from neoliberal, left-wing on identity and right-wing on economics. Maybe in the last 5 years, we move this way. I still think we're probably over here on identity. But the big move was rightward on the x-axis over the last 5 years, going from left-wing on culture, right-wing on economics to right-wing on economics and right-wing on culture. The next move, where we have the most to gain, is a move downward on the vertical axis towards economic populism, left-wing economics in some sense. Even if it's not outright left-wing economics, it's trending in that direction. And to me, we can control this entire half of the graph here. We can control the entire half of this, what would you call this, a graph, an axis. We can have the whole, everything to the right of this axis can be ours electorally and politically if we play our cards right. Now, what does that mean? It means that we can probably expand the electorate by appealing to liberal, white, working class, in some cases older people or college graduates in states like Minnesota or in New Hampshire or in Wisconsin or Michigan by saying that, you know, we're not in favor of a healthcare plan that leaves people uninsured or slapped with huge bills in hospitals and with ambulances and so on. Maybe we're going to take care of people more. Maybe we're going to have a more liberal approach to economics. You can expand your electorate. We've got this on lock, okay? We've got all the people that are free market, all the Reagan coalition people here. We've got them on lock. We can bring this whole quadrant into the fold, of which there are many people in here, by simply losing some of the hardcore Reagan dogma, by just drifting a little bit down on this axis, by drifting a little bit left. I know it's counterintuitive because I'm showing down, but saying left, if we drift a little bit in this direction and maybe get in a happy medium somewhere in this area, that would yield huge electoral victories, huge electoral prospects and potential. And also, this is an ideology which would save the country. You know, this kind of stuff, everything up here, not really sufficient. Neoliberalism is going to make the problem worse. Everything on this side, this is our enemy. These are the people we have a problem with. People that want to destroy America is what's on the left. People that are left-wing on culture and identity say that basically white people shouldn't exist. And white people's time is over in America, and Christianity is over, and so on. That is this axis. We can have all the rest. And truth be told, I don't really care about the vertical axis. And we can afford not to care, because you know what's going to happen is, regardless of what we feel about economics, this is going to be the defining axis of our time, culture and identity. In other words, we can have a free market system, a socialist system. We kind of already have a socialist system in some capacity, right? What is it, like 50% of all healthcare spending is by the government. You look at all the onerous regulations and all the spending the government does, $4 trillion in government spending a year. The GDP is $20 trillion. So that's a fifth of our spending is from the government. So I'm saying in some capacity, this axis is irrelevant. This is what will define the future and consequentially the outcome on this axis. If we, and I've said this before in different terms, but if we go left on culture and identity, if we have mass immigration, whether you're justifying it because you're a progressive and you hate white people, you're a neoliberal and you're Jewish and you hate white people and you want the economy to grow, no matter what side of this axis you're on, if you're on the left, you are going to see America become a multiracial country. Whites are going to become a minority. The Democrats become a party that are never going to leave the White House, never going to leave the Senate ever again. And so consequentially, you're going to get the country in this zone. If you're on this side, you will end up in this zone eventually. You know, neoliberals are advocating for a policy that will put these people in power forever. You know, I think that's the best way to say it. And so that is why we have to be predominantly fixated on winning everything on this side, everything that is culturally right-wing. And we can be in favor of property rights. Like I said, we can be in favor of low taxes and localism and things like that, maybe a relatively free market. But also, we should not be afraid of going left on economics. We should not be afraid of restraining the free market, of shutting down big banks, going after the rich, going after, even if you don't think it's a good idea, because truth be told, I'm pretty right-wing on economics, but some things are so out of control, and not only are some things out of control in terms of the economy, but moreover, even if we do things that don't make sense economically now, it's much more preferable to get in power and have left-wing economic policies as nationalists than it is for left-wing people to get in power, no matter what their view is on the economy. Do you understand that? So in other words, even if you don't like this idea, even if you're I'm a rootin' tootin' Ronald Reagan, rugged individualist, free market conservative, you might have to bite the bullet. You know, you might have to suck it up and say, well, I'll vote for somebody left-wing on economics, because if these people get in power, it's game over for everybody. If these people get in power, anybody on this side, even if they're up here, this is where you all end up. And this is hell. This is 1,000 years of darkness over here. This is extinction for our people. This is America goes under. America becomes Brazil. And this is what happens if somebody from this side of the axis or some party or some coalition controls the government at some time in the next 4 or 5 decades. So to me, and to tie it into the British elections, the quote that I heard from one of these British journalists, he said, "The lesson that we learned from Boris Johnson winning this historic victory is that it's much easier for conservatives to go left on economics than it is for liberals to go right on identity." And we should understand that. This is the future. Populism is the future. People that are, you know, populism means you're appealing to the people based on their culture and also their economic interests. You know, using working class, middle class resentment against the elites. You know, whether you think the elites are benevolent, you know, shadow hand, invisible hand, they're amazing, titans of industry, whatever, they're the people that are destroying the country. So if we can mobilize the people against the elites based on cultural identity and economic resentment, whoever gets populism controls the next century. The left can't do it. The left can't make this leap. They can't go from left-wing on culture identity to right-wing on culture and identity. Or if they can, it's very difficult. You know, I think the person who's most posed, or rather the most poised to do that, would be somebody like Bernie Sanders, and he's nowhere even close. He's not even close to being right-wing on any of these cultural issues. So the quote is, it's much easier for right-wing people to go left on economics than it is for them to go here. So let's go there. Boris Johnson went there. Boris Johnson, who is right because he supported the Brexit, because he's right-wing on culture and identity, and at the very least, he was ambivalent about economics. Maybe you could say he's fluid between these two. He was able to capture this area, this quadrant, that unleashed a lot of votes, a lot of potential, and that's going to be the realignment. This is, in some sense, in a little way, what Trump did. You know, I put Trump up here based on how he governed, but how he campaigned, he'd probably be closer to here. Because on healthcare, he didn't say, we need a free market healthcare system. He said, we need to take care of everybody. You know, on government spending, he didn't even talk about the deficit. He said, like, oh, I'll bring down the deficit. But he also said, I want a $1 trillion infrastructure project, right? He said, we want tariffs. We're going to tell companies that if you outsource your labor or whatever, we're going to put a tax on you and tax your product and make it harder for you to do business. That's trending left wing. So Trump, I think, definitely campaigned here. We just need to realign the whole party this way. We need to get the rhetoric, the policy, consolidate some of the ideas, and have a very coherent sort of nationalist, populist perspective on the world, a very nationalist, populist ideology. That, to me, is the future. Somebody like a Tucker Carlson, and maybe he could even take it a little bit further. But that's, to me, the whiteboard. That's the big takeaway from the British elections. That's really kind of why I wanted to talk about it, because we see that it works. Boris Johnson, in many ways, proved that it worked. When he went over this, Blythe Valley in northeast England, it's a mining district. It's working class white people that have been voting Labour forever. And he made them Tory, and they voted overwhelmingly for the right-wing party. That's realignment. It's realigning people that might have been, what would you say? It's people that were over here. They're now voting right-wing instead of left-wing. So to me, that's the big takeaway from the election. But that's our whiteboard. We're going to move on and take a look at our super chats. We'll see what you guys are saying about all this. About the, I'm sure I'll get a number of corrections, maybe on pronunciations and other things. Some Angloids are probably losing their minds. You know, they're not counties, Nick. They're not provinces. They're, whatever. So we'll hear from you guys. I'm interested to see what some of the British people might have to say about this, because of course, I am not British, so I only know about this election from what I've read about it. But we'll take a look here. We'll see what we've got. Mr. Corgi says, Mama Fuentes said in the email that y'all made the MTV crew cookies. Did you offer them $6 million or $300,000? That's okay, great. Mr. Corgi says, RIP, R Zoomer right, R based Zoomers, and R Bay, what is this, based Gen Z? A little bit of a typo there. Yeah, did they all get banned, I guess? Yeah, big F in chat. Honestly, though, the whole reason I never started a subreddit of my own is because I knew this would happen, you know. People have started two Nick Fuentes subreddits, and they both got banned in a relatively short amount of time. So it's like, what were you trying to do? Ja G says, Femoids on Nick's timeline be like, MTV reached out to me too, but I turned them down because I'm smart. Yeah, well, you know, I don't know. I don't want to say anything, but ultimately kind of worked out for me, didn't it? So calculated risks. It's almost like you just got to trust the plan. Aw, shucks. Oh, shucks, I shouldn't have done that. I just got on cable television and a lot of publicity. I wonder how it always seems to work out in my favor. It must just be accidental. Normie says, Rule Britannia. Okay. Oatmeal says, Revelation 6 talks about stars falling to earth like figs falling from a fig tree. How does this work on the ball earth without wiping out the planet when stars are supposedly bigger than the earth? I don't know. Pounds Aesthetics, I'm not an astronomer. Pounds Aesthetic or a theologian. Pounds Aesthetic says, America First hoodie just arrived. Thanks, big guy. Well, thanks. Glenn says, of course, Labor lost. They spell it wrong, dummies. Funny. Jomo says, RIP Farage. Yeah, that was pretty sad. Nigel Farage's Brexit party, 0 seats. Hate to see it. Daniel says, Boneheads here. Still keep spouting sensationalized talking points like privatizing the NHS. Try having an original thought for once in your lives, FFS. I don't know, dude. I mean, look, I'm not like a free market, you know, hyper free market guy, but NHS kind of sucks, doesn't it? I mean, the idea of a national healthcare system or service to me seems like a really bad idea. So I don't know if I'd be in favor of privatizing it, but I would not trust the government to take care of my health care, honestly. Or to have, like, no private insurance available. That, to me, is just, like, a disaster. T. Calloway says, look up. I did not consent to this crab being sprayed in the sky. Oh, a chemtrail guy, great. John says, still stuck on the desert island with Jake Lloyd. Now you each get an e-girl. Brittany Venti, Kathy Zhu, Cassie Dillon. Who do you get? Who does Jake get? It doesn't matter, because honestly, you know what we do to both of them. Once they appeared or whatever, an e-girl on a desert island situation would drag us down. They would add nothing. They would contribute nothing. They would actually be a huge liability, especially these three, you know. Some e-girls might be less of a liability than others, but these three, I don't know what they would add to the situation. So it doesn't matter. They'd both be getting fed to the island monkeys, right? They'd both be getting fed to the, whatever populates this desert island. You know, maybe it's warthogs or wolves or monkeys, or maybe it's indigenous people, some kind of indigenous tribesmen that, you know, we don't go on that side of the beach because they keep shooting bow and arrow. they keep shooting arrows at us, and they keep throwing spears at us. Maybe we'll send them over there, feed them to sharks, I don't know. But they're not going to be joining us on the desert islands. Bad news. I'd rather have Kensney and Patrick Casey on there than Brittany Venti and Cassie Dillon. They would hurt us. Calloway says, something to remember about New Jersey. They don't care if they lose their own as long as it hurts us. It's a very good point. That's very, very true. West Nat says, studying for my management final, and the textbook talks about how men are more task-oriented, autocratic, and directive with their leadership style, while women are more socially oriented, participative, and democratic. Though, thought this was a good summary of the left versus the right dichotomy, reinforces the idea that this divide is ultimately a difference between the male and female worldview. That's very true. In some sense, there's a lot to this that, you know, conservatism properly understood, or the right wing, is about order. You know, what is the man about? The man is about order. And the left is about chaos, change, things like that. You know, you could say that the right is Apollonian and the left is Dionysian. And the female is obviously left. The female is obviously Dionysian. And the male, the conservative, is obviously right. It's obviously ordered and Apollonian. So, yeah, I definitely think there's a female energy to the left, male energy to the right. It's pretty obvious by who dominates the two sides. On the left, you've got these sort of doting school headmaster types like Elizabeth Warren and Hillary Clinton, these finger-wagging, like, C-words, for lack of a better word. But you know the type I'm talking about. These bitches wagging their finger, and you can't do that, and that's not nice, and, you know, we need to love everybody. We need to be tolerant. You've got that on the left, and sort of bitchy, snarky deception. And on the right, you know, you've got balls to the wall, belligerent, obnoxious, epic. Trump wants to build walls, build a big wall to keep us safe. Very true. That's a very good point. Yeet Skeeterson says, another day past the deadline, another episode of America First. Susan trusts the plan. P.S. If I order merch today, will it arrive by Christmas in Maine? I'm trying to hook up my friends with some America First gear. I can't give you a guarantee, but yeah, I mean, generally, I don't think I've heard of anybody having to wait for like more than 2 weeks, but I don't know. It kind of depends on a number of factors. I think you should be fine, but I don't know. I don't handle the fulfillment. I just obviously host the store on my website, but I have nothing to do with fulfillment, so it's hard to say. But don't jinx it. Stop saying, oh, it's one more day past the deadline. Stop saying that. You're going to jinx it. Professor Eric says, okay, great. This is a lot of lorem ipsum talk. Thanks for that. Steven says, UK exit polls may look good, but the Conservative Party is still heavily pro-Remain and may yet manage to screw up becoming a free, independent country. Yeah, that's true. I'm really a lot less concerned about the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom is not a world power anymore. The United Kingdom is a regional power. So I'm not really concerned about, oh, are they going to get Brexit? You know, is it going to be a soft Brexit? I don't really care. What I care about is the analogy to the American elections. I care about having a finger on the pulse of the global realignment. That's the whole show is not about what's going to happen with Brexit. It's been about what does it mean for us? What does it mean for the people that matter, the people who live in the important country? Says, let's say you find me down at the gas station biting into one of the diesel cans. Would I be gay then? Would I be gay or something? What is a diesel can? Oh, okay. I don't know. I don't know how that would make you gay, but okay. RA says, yet another slow news day. Oh boy, Nick's going to say not much is happening, and tomorrow we're going to have literal space aliens attacking the planet. Yeah, well, pretty slow news day. We got to talk about Britain. But yeah, hopefully Project Blue Beam comes soon. We need something to talk about on the show. Mentality says, Sargon went off on his election stream. He said, quote, migrants have yet to show any respect for British customs. You would still be enslaving each other if it wasn't for the British Empire. Based? Was on Jesse Lee Peterson too. Sargon is based. I know a lot of, like, he's become sort of a meme in our circles. You know, people make fun of him and everything. I was never that familiar with his content. Like, when Sargon, like, came onto the scene, I'd, like, never watched his content. I was watching, like, Gavin McInnes and Jarrah Taylor and, you know, things like that. So I never really got into the Sargon, like, that extended universe. So I'm not really familiar with all the drama, all the, like, deep lore, all the deep background there. But from what I've seen from him, he's becoming increasingly based. I think he is just very based. So he kind of gets, I mean, he's obviously an individualist and a liberal and so on, but it seems like he's getting there. Cool Kid says, is a conservative win showcasing that Britain is still a waspy neocon country, or given the Brexit delay, a sign that nationalism is growing? Possibly both. Enjoy the Leaf Bucks, King. Now, I wouldn't get carried away. I don't know if this is evidence that nationalism is growing. I don't think it's evidence that Britain is still a waspy country. I think this is very particular to this election in this time on this issue of Brexit. You know, I think we have to be careful about falling victim to reading into elections and things, our own narratives, our own agenda. You know, for example, like the 2016 election. 2016 election was decided by a few thousand votes. Hate to break it to you. In Florida, in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, you know, those were the states that won the election, and all of them were determined by a very, very tiny sliver of the electorate. All of this is to say it could have very easily gone in the other direction if, like, a couple of things had been different. And what would have been the narrative if Hillary Clinton had won? If a couple of variables had been different, things that might not even have anything to do with ideology or anything, might be Hillary campaign in Michigan, if people spent ad money in a different way. You know what I'm saying? And so if the election was so close, it was a landslide. It wasn't a landslide. In a very technical way, in terms of electoral math, it was a landslide. But like I said, it was those three states with a very small sliver of the electorate that got us over the top. Now, it could have just as easily gone the other way. And if it did, and Hillary Clinton won, would we have said that nationalism is on the rise and it's a new day in America and there's this new hope and so on? Or would we say that America's done and Hillary Clinton's the president and that shows that America rejects nationalism and so on? Do you know what I mean? So I'd be careful to reading too much into it. I'm trying to prescribe what we should do based on some of this stuff and some of the broader trends, but I wouldn't say that these voters went out and they're like, I'm nationalist. I mean, maybe on a certain level it was about that, but I'd be cautious about saying, you know, Boris Johnson is in, that means Britain's based. I mean, obviously Britain is not based. Mossad says, is the situation with Virginia, we've got somebody saying boogaloo. Boogaloo is a Fed word. I just don't tolerate it here. I've never heard that word used organically. I almost exclusively hear it from Feds, people advocating violence. So and from Mossad. Yeah, I'm not reading that. Wag the Dog says, what literature or videos red-pilled you on the Cold War? Red-pilled me on the Cold War. What about the Cold War? About the nature of the Soviet Union? Or what? I don't know exactly what red pill you mean by that. RA says, I wonder what the likelihood is of Nick getting bored by covering Anglo elections and switching over to covering the paused game awards happening right now instead. I didn't even know there were game awards happening. Sun Game says, what's up? Or he says, what's a super Chad? Okay. Penny Dreams says, gun consumers obsessed about mag nomenclature are the neckbeard Lego losers of the right wing. Shout out to our consume product on Reddit. God bless. There is something that's definitely like consumer culture about that. I get so annoyed about these people who are like really autistic about the gun terminology and like tactical equipment and everything. It's like, look, just buy a gun. You know what I mean? People are like, oh, I've got these cool attachments. I've got the blah, 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 blah. Just, you know, I think if you just get in a semi-automatic rifle, you know, whatever, I think like you're good. You know, that's enough for me. Whatever. Go to the gun store. Yeah, give me a shotgun. Give me a shotgun that shoots, that shoots shotgun rounds, and show me how to load it. Show me how to shoot it, and that's what you need, right? I mean, that to me is the long and short of it. What AR should I buy? I trust you. Okay, I'll get an AR-15 or I'll get a whatever. I mean, to me, that's the long and short of it. But some of these people, it's like, oh, they're so obsessed with. And to me, that's just another, like you said, you hit the nail on the head. It's like another form of like consumer culture. It's these people that are, you know, endlessly fascinated with trinkets and widgets and things like that, like Legos, Funko Pops, you know, computer parts, things like that. What is really the point? Let's see. Treader says, got banned from Twitter at the same time the GLS invites were rolling out. Blackpilled again. New at is Happy Internet. Yeah, I took care of that. Don't worry. RA says, sending this at 8:30. Nick, you're 30 minutes into Super Chats. I feel like those people who go to marathons to hand out water bottles to the runners from the sidelines to cheer them on. You can do it. Yeah, that's a pretty accurate analogy. Thanks for the water bottle. Thanks for the boost. Big John Town says, seems like YouTube has given up trying to rehabilitate me with these fake conservatives and now exclusively recommends CNN shut it down. Yeah, their algorithm, I think, is getting more aggressive. Scooter says, whose adult teeth will grow in first, Baby Yoda or Charlie Kirk? Wow, cool baby. What way to shoehorn in a Baby Yoda reference into a Charlie Kirk joke. Congratulations, Narwhal Bacon Mode on that one. Shawas says, bless ya, thanks. Anon says, did you see that bus attack? Having grown up in an integrated school. Thanks, National Guard. I'm not surprised. Never relax around you-know-who. I did see the bus attack. Yeah, Charlie Kirk says it's about Democrats. And I agree. You know, this is a left-wing phenomenon. South Side of Chicago, left-wing violence. Baltimore, left-wing crime, left-wing violence. Right, we all know this. Detroit, South Bend, Gary, Indiana, you know you can't drive there after dusk because of this Democrat-motivated violence. They're shooting and killing each other over the Medicare debate. You know, you got some people that want Medicare for all, and they're wearing blue bandanas, and the other one's wearing red bandanas. They want Medicare for all and want it. And I know they hate Republicans, though, right? Yeah, so it's more partisan violence. What can you do, right? We just got to pass out more constitutions, and I think we'll be in good shape. Stitchy Boy says, dummies be like, conservatives should win because it says conservative. I don't know what that means. Ahalia says, this witness is true. Wherefore, rebuke them sharply that they may be sound in faith, not giving heed to Jewish fables and commandments of men that turn from the truth, says Titus 1:13-14. Yeah, very true. Enza says, hi, Nick. First time watching live from the UK and feeling incredibly white-pilled. Today's vote was described as a youthquake by the media. So hopefully this is a sign of a more conservative Gen Z. I don't know. I haven't looked at any of the polling for young people in the UK. You probably know more than me. RA, I think the youth in the UK is probably more left-wing, would be my guess, but I haven't looked at the numbers. RA says, nice tie, Nick. Is that a fresh new shirt? No, it's actually an old shirt that I don't actually wear very much. And I realized why. All my other shirts were wrinkled, so I was like, okay, I'll wear this one. And I remember why I never wear it. It's because this neck is so tight. The neck is way too small. It's choking me. And it's pissing me off. And I'm furious because of it. So, anyway. Vinny says, cool tie, thanks. Your greatest ally says, that schmood when Angular Nick called out that soy boy holding the sign. These people are pathetic. Their beliefs are so bad, the only way they can hold them is to not talk to anyone. Yeah, very true. Well, yeah, that guy saw at the gun rally. He's like, I'm not even sure why I'm talking to you. Yeah, but, I mean, what else is new? Their ideology is a pile of sand. Elgato says, you looked like such a Chad in the MTV documentary Great Optics, King. Well, thanks. Franz says, is it possible that JLP mistook you for the 87th Doge of Venice the other day? Don't know what that means. Keep up the good work. God bless. P.S. Any possibility on doing an episode with our beloved hero, Sammy Guns? I don't know if it'll be on America First, but who knows? Maybe a collaboration. We'll see. Torch On says, true life. Told me it was true life. Subject was the young right. Try to touch a sky. Okay, I don't know what this is. Cringe. Inclusion says, Nick, you should try out a fountain pen sometimes. What does that mean? JTV says, white kid wearing MAGA hat is beat by blacks. No protest. Sad, yeah. Yeah, that's white people for you. Penny Dreams says, famous conspiracy guy Miles Mathis has a paper showing that there's a good chance Trump is ethnically Jewish. If it walks like a duck, that's just retarded. That's just the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. He might be, but does it really matter? JS says, crawl toward me. Okay. Jack says, is Barry Bonds better than Drunken Hot Girls? Barry Bonds is a good song. Drunken Hot Girls is not. I don't know why. If you're trying to say that Barry Bonds is a bad song, you're wrong. John says, Orthodox Judaism is strict, not degenerate. No? I mean, well, what do you mean by degenerate? I think worshiping Moloch, not that they do that, but as an example, even if you were like socially conservative, but you worshiped like the devil, I mean, you probably would say that's degenerate. Not that they do that. They definitely don't do that. But, you know, I should have said for example, hypothetically, if one were to be worshiping Baphomet or Baal, you know, some kind of ancient Canaanite god, I mean, probably you would say that's degenerate, even if they were conservative. You know, like if you're doing animal sacrifices or things like that, drinking, you know, I don't know. So I would say that, sure, Orthodox Jews are socially conservative, but anyway, Theodore McCarthy says, the difference between Jews and Christians goes beyond belief in Christ. They are the heirs of the Pharisees, whose legalistic pseudo-religion Christ denounced in his ministry. Okay, so it's about Christ, obviously. Lance Pickle says, Christianity without the church leads to liberalism. Yes, it does. Gruzy says, he says, pee-pee-poo-poo, but backwards. Franz says, what is your favorite platformer? I don't really like platformers, honestly. I don't even remember the last time I played one. Maybe some of the Star Wars games for, like, Game Boy were pretty good. Elmer says the Tory party has to collapse. Oh, Mario 64 is pretty good for DS. I didn't play it on the original 64, but I played it on DS. And that's pretty fun. Elmer says the Tory party has to collapse for real conservatism to take its place. They didn't stop a bill that legalized abortion and gay marriage in Northern Ireland this October, where abortion was illegal. Please pray for NI, okay. For Northern Ireland, I see. Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I mean, that's broadly true about what's happening in both countries. Kevin says, now presenting the Goy and Chief of Israelica. Okay, what is just going on? All these super chats are just hardcore cringe. Vaughn says, did you see the Pope said Jews can enter heaven? I didn't see that. Boz Vivo says, future for the white race. Okay, nah, we are still screwed and Tories are still neocons, but so glad labor equals wrecked. Yeah. Nova, of course, is in a previous super chat. You said you didn't support the progressive labor movement in the 1900s. Could you expand as to why? Thanks for all the content, King. There were some good progressives. Trust busting was good. You know, Theodore Roosevelt was a good, I think he identified as a progressive. But the ultimate progressive was Woodrow Wilson. And Woodrow Wilson gave us World War I and the Federal Reserve and the income tax, all of which are terrible. So, you know, I would say that if the crowning achievement of progressivism was not actually to rein in any meaningful way big business or protect the environment or anything like that, but instead to empower the federal bank, the national bank, I would say was a failure. Name says, they are gaslighting us, King. It's a bit much, yeah. Jokel says, daily reminder that people who die in a state of mortal sin will spend infinity apart from God and suffering beyond our wildest imaginations. Yeah, something to keep in mind. Recovering Libertarian says, what is wrong with being morbidly obese and black? Nothing. I think it's great. Von D says, should you repent for rap that promotes sin? I don't think so. I don't think there's anything in the catechism about what, listening to rap? I don't know. I mean, I guess the church probably wouldn't encourage it, but I don't think it's like a mortal sin. Alan says, thoughts on Colin Flaherty, sort of based for a boomer, even though he never names them. But for what it's worth, he does shed a lot of light on the 1350 thing. Yeah, he's based. Magazog says, Nick, have you ever thought about starting an America First motorcycle gang? No. Matthew says, is the plan that China just buys all our food? Bad strategy to fix globalism. Yeah. Franz says, closed on Sunday. You're my Nick Ponte. Ha ha ha. Oh, ha ha, hee hee. And I thought my jokes were bad. Let's see. Mr. Cider says, and the first name is Dixon there, says, can't believe I missed your show yesterday. I live in Jersey City where the shooting happened. I saw people Millie Rock to the beat of the gunfire. That's kind of funny. That's kind of base, though. Dr. Spaghetti says, go to the best state and get yourself a proper mushroom Swiss from Whataburger after the Nativity Fast. Surely we have a few more months before the Border Bunnies ban white food here. I just want it. Right, Joker mode. Hello, Joker. Yo, knock, knock. White. I'm so glad to hear mushroom Swiss, white, Texas is the best state. We have it all in here. We have it all. Shoddy Cast says, great show, Nick. Just curious, what kind of job would you have pursued if you didn't get into politics? God bless. I don't know. I don't know what I'd do. I'd be a professional serial killer. No, just kidding. That's a joke. Dancing Pepe's, I'd probably be something like an American Psycho. Dancing Pepe says, yo, Nick, have supported you 100%. No, I'd be a taxi driver. I've supported you 100%, but you blocked me on Twitter. Would love reconsideration, but will still support you regardless. Godspeed. Yeah, I'm not going to unblock you, but thanks for the support. Ham Side says, Nick, what's your email? I have a bit of a lengthy question for you. But I don't want you to spend 30-plus minutes answering my question. You feel? LMAO. LMAO is right, yeah, because I'm going to spend 30 minutes not on the show answering your lengthy question over email. Yeah, well, the email is in the description. It's njfuentesblog@gmail.com. Yeah, send it to me. I don't know, maybe I'll answer it. You know, what I love is people emailing me lengthy questions. I love individually responding to people. I love that so much about politics. That is such a productive activity for everybody involved and for the world. Australopithecus. So yeah, it's njfuentesblog@gmail.com. You can send me an email. I'll try my best to get to it, but no promises. I was like wading through emails today. I have like 500 emails in my inbox. Somehow I answer like emails every day and it just, the number doesn't change because I just get like dozens of emails every day. So I'm wading through a ton of them. I can't promise I'm going to give you a timely response, but I'll probably read it. Let's see. Australopithecus with a big super chat has just got some goldfish. Should I name them? Yeah, you should name them. But thanks for the big super chat. Harold says, caught your MTV D-Live last night. The word you were after for the Groiper card is endearing. No, I don't think that's what I was going for. Bert says, have you watched any of Peter Zeihan's lectures? They all have essentially the same info, but it's very helpful in understanding global politics. No. The name sounds somewhat familiar. I guess I'll check that out. Yoker says, you hear about the Netflix show that had Jesus as gay? No, I didn't hear about that. Philip Fry says, hey, Nick, late to the show. Have you heard of the Virginia counties creating Second Amendment sanctuary laws that just started this November when the state flipped blue? Over 50% of the states are already on board. Yeah, I have heard about that. And that's the consequence. All these, like, you know, boomers, they want to clutch the guns and do the low tax thing. And they realize then that the states are going to flip blue no matter what because of demographic change. No matter what you do, ultimately, if you don't get the demographics right, you get Democrats. And then they take your guns. And, you know, I said this before, but if you get all the Democratic policies anyway. So, no surprise. Stitchy says, my friend Carlos says, pee-pee-poo-poo, keep it up, thanks. Anand says, uppity Europores need to be put in their place. Maybe pulling their defense budget and letting Russia invade Ukraine would change that attitude. Honestly, if it got them in line, maybe that'd be a good outcome. Boss Vivo says, historically, exit polls have underpredicted conservative seats too, so this is very white-pilling. Yeah, well, I guess we'll have to wait and see what the final tally is. Raw says, millennial Groiper here. Keep it up, big guy. Thanks. Samuel says, my son just got invited to his Jewish friend's Passover party to synagogue. Thoughts? I don't know. I think it goes against... I'm not positive on what the doctrine is on this, but I don't think you're supposed to go and attend other religious services like that. I don't know. Might be a social thing to do, but I believe you're... I'm not 100% on that, but I would consult the catechism if I were you. Haim Silver Shekel says, our impact on this world is measured by the lives we touch. Keep it up, King. Shout out to MedFag. Nika is going through the interviews right now. Good luck, everybody. Well, thanks. I don't know why you say MedFag. You sound like an ankloid like that. Persian Mafia says, glad I caught you live so I can throw some dough your way. This episode on the Brits is cool. Always appreciate it when you mix things up. You're killing it, Nick. Well, thanks. Danger Aaron says, Trump's recent executive order on Jews, even as the elite's confused. Dave Rothschild on Twitter doesn't like it because he says he's now slumped in with the Zionists. I don't think the elites are ever confused, but yeah, I mean, there is like a nominal difference between left-wing Jews and Zionists, but I think we all realize it's pretty much fictitious. Mark says, pee-pee-poo-poo. Prince of Conquest says, Joker announced as fighter in Mortal Kombat 11. Very cool. Yeah, but it's not like the Joker from the movie. Fran says, can we get some F's in chat for dropped pointers? So funny. Francis, I just can't read that one. Burn says, yo, Nick, not a Fed here. Okay, I can't read that. Says he's not a Fed, but yet we have a very Fed message. Tandrew says, most Americans are on the cultural right-wing half of the graph. Loyalty to your home and family is inherent and natural. Market worship is killing us. Yeah, and that's why we should embrace that side. Focus on cultural issues as opposed to economic issues. Groyper says, what do you think about people like William Jennings Bryan, Teddy Roosevelt, and Huey Long? Teddy Roosevelt, I think, is like the model for us. I would say that Huey Long and William Jennings Bryan, definitely too left-wing for me. You know, Huey Long in particular. There's something about like his tactics which we should emulate, being a populist and creating a political machine and things like that. The cult of personality is admirable, but the policies were just bad all the way around. So I don't know if I would go full Huey Long. I don't know if I'd go full William Jennings Bryant, but I think Teddy Roosevelt is probably the model, the archetype for what we're trying to get to. Brendan says, Nick, moreover, Fuentes. Yeah, Nick, additionally. Let's see. What else do we have here? Nicholas Gerber says, been watching since you interviewed my friend Yusuf. Glad to see his influence spreading beyond the lunch table. Trust the plan and trust God's plan. So true. Yeah, good old Yusuf changing the game with his BTFOing of Steven Crowder. Jude says, if we can make an exception for traps. I don't think anybody's talking about making an exception for traps, but go off. Jude says, if we can make an exception for traps due to the degenerate state of woman, can we make an exception for anime GFs? I don't think anybody ever said anything about an exception. So I think you're a little misinformed on my position on that. Magazog says, that all makes sense now. Thanks for getting out the whiteboard today. It's been sort of a rough week trying to understand why I should vote for Trump. Just vote for Trump. There's what? Why would you not vote for Trump? You have two options. You've got Donald Trump and you've got, you know, somebody from the left. It could be Michelle Obama, it could be Hillary Clinton, or it could be somebody from the field. It could be Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, potentially. Who are you going to vote for? I just don't get it. I just don't understand. It's like the same thing in 2016 with all the Never Trumpers. Who are you going to vote for? You have a binary choice. There are two people that could win the election, a Republican and a Democrat. Not hard. Well, I don't know why I should vote for Donald Trump. You don't have to like it. You don't have to like him, but you should have to like him more than the other side. I know people don't like to hear that, but when it comes to these national elections, it's a very binary choice. You know, one person is going to put us in jail and do red flag laws for white nationalists and so on, and, you know, one's not. So let's see. Brandon says, if cringe white Fed posters or Wignats are black Hebrew Israelites, black gnats. No, you don't know what Wignat... The derivative of the term Wignat is Wigger, so it's not white, it's Wigger. ASAP says, my GF says, I'm too sensitive and called me a femme boy because I talked about my emotions. Any tips? Yeah, stop being a pussy. Your girlfriend's probably right. If your girlfriend, well, I don't know. Some women are kind of overkill with that. They're like, you're not manly enough. You know, so you have to sort of use your own discretion, but generally speaking, if you are like, oh, you know, all about your emotions and everything, well, she probably got a point, King. Just suck it up. Joe says, constituencies, not counties. Solid take on the, there it is. Solid take on the British election, though. Cheers, mate. Well, oi, cheers. Thanks for that, my Angloid friend. ASAP says, I've been away from the church, not leaving my beliefs, but any tips to get back into it? Also, how to avoid porn? Just willpower. Thank you for what you do. been away from the church, not leaving my beliefs, but how to get back into it? Well, if you're confirmed Catholic, go to confession, start going to church again. I mean, it's not, you know, it's like, you remember in school when people, when the teacher would say, ask your friend before you ask the teacher. Well, if you don't know the homework, if you know what you're supposed to do, ask your friends before you ask the teacher. It's like, how do I get back into the church? I don't know. Start going to church again. How do I get back into the church? Get back in church. Get back in the church. Physically start going to church again. Like Sunday, you know, you go there every Sunday and there's a little ceremony. People get there together. You know, maybe that's a starter. So I would go to church. You know, if you're confirmed, go to, you know, confession, whatever. If you're not confirmed, go to what, RCIA, whatever. Try to get in. Just start doing research. Maybe even start going to church even if you're not confirmed yet. That's probably how to get in. And how to avoid porn? Just don't look it up, bro. Don't. What do you mean how to avoid porn? Nobody opens up their Apple iPhone out of the box and it's like, oh, pornography is on this device. Uh-oh. I was Googling, you know, Wikipedia. I was Googling Project Bluebeam and all of a sudden pornography came up. I was Googling Blood Passover and pornography came up instead. Like, it doesn't happen accidentally. Just don't. And now I understand people have like trouble because it's force of habit and, you know, there's some component of addiction, but I don't know, just try to find other things to do. It takes a lot of willpower, I guess, but it fundamentally comes down to you just have to stop. There's no easy answer. You just have to stop, and it's hard. And it's hard to break a bad habit, but that's what you have to do. You know, that's what you have to realize about life is there's no like shortcuts. You just have to do what you have to do. That might sound like a tautology or something, but it's true. You know, nobody's going to tell you there's this magic trick to whatever. You just can't do it. Just don't do it. John says, America First airs Monday through Friday. Does that mean the marketplace of ideas is closed on Saturday and Sunday? It does, actually, yeah. M says, I think instead of trying to destroy something, we need to be focused on building up ourselves and our community back through culture, religion, etc. Wow, that's a really... No, we do have to destroy. We have to destroy the establishment. We have to destroy the elites. They will not let you build if you don't destroy first. Don't you understand that? Build up whatever you want. If the elites remain unchallenged like they are, they're going to come over and knock your sandcastle over. I've been saying this for a long time. You know, people think the solution is we just got to go and like start a farm, just go into the woods, just do our own thing. They're going to find you. They're going to follow you. They're not going to leave you alone. In any totalitarian country, do they let dissidents organize, create communities, build, in other words, and they just leave them alone? It doesn't happen. In every totalitarian country, you know, what is the operative word? Totalitarian. Total control over the population and, you know, their lives. So this idea of, well, we just have to go somewhere else. No, they're not going to leave you alone. Diversity, pause, globalism, the elites control, it will expand over every corner of the globe. Nowhere you can run to, unless you could buy your own private island, they'll go there too, anyway. So no, we have to destroy the establishment first, and then we could build something. But yeah, it's a nice thought, but you know, they're not going to leave us alone. They're not going to let us build something. You've seen this happen. People try to build, and they just get their shit pushed in, you know, because the elites are still vastly more powerful. Torchon says, every single show is lit, not a single torch lit. Oh, 100,000 in super chats, I don't even pay rent. Okay, great. John Pan says, you and Jake clink bamboo cups on the island sand as you watch the e-girls float out to sea, exiled from the island, and subsequently consumed by sharks. Yeah, me and Jake on the beach. Coconut beverage in hand, you know, sliced open coconut, some kind of tropical beverage, clink, and we watch the indigenous island people cannibalizing the e-girls, and I think that would be so. It doesn't really matter who it was who we bring onto the desert island. That's the fate. Blue Satoshi says Sargon crossed the line when he tried accusing Medicar of being a groomer, just because he didn't want to be Sargon's mouthpiece. See, yeah, I'm not really privy to all this e-drama. Torchon says, man, you know what it's like? I was at this gun rally. I called this guy a faggot. He said, that ain't Christ-like. I said, but you are. Okay, so this guy, you're just really just trying, man. Just really pushing. You're just really trying. Thanks. Anonymous Tipper says, my cat has fleas. Can we get prayers for Riley, spelled R-Y-L-E-E. No, I am not praying for your cat named Riley with a Y and two E's. I'm not going to do that. I refuse. I will not pray for that cat. You know, they need to change the name. I don't even like cats. I'm allergic to cats. Why would I pray for that? I'm praying for the fleas. Storm says, Nick, that is to say Fuentes, yeah. Kane rules, says Boris Johnson is an open borders establishment goon. Corbyn would have been better against cookies. I just can't do it anymore, man. I just can't. Also, we should kick California, New York out of the USA. Amazing. Earth-shattering take. Thank you so much. Joe says, Nick, enjoyed your stream reviewing your MTV appearance. That meth head, Fanuc Shane Johnson, looks like a panhandler on the CTA. Just ordered my America First mug. God bless you and your family. Take care, King. Well, thanks. Hope you enjoy the mug. Yeah, that guy's a total goof. Boopers says, wonder what Molyneux's plan is to stop kids from getting beat up on school buses. School was all the red pills I ever needed. Boomers will never get it. Yeah, well, Molyneux is a total cuck. We know this. When the going gets tough, Molyneux gets going. We all know that. Jane says, if you ever come to Toronto, I will take you to the best Polish restaurant in town called Cafe Polonaise. I will change your mind about Polish food. Oh, I will absolutely take you up on that for sure. Jackson says, you have your Dominic the Donkey statue up yet? No. I don't even like that song, honestly. We're not. I don't even know what that is. I've never heard of that. Mark says, in your first debate with R.C. Maxwell, you mentioned that the normative American should subscribe to Anglo-Protestant culture. How would you define such culture, given your faith? Well, what I mean by that is Anglo-Protestants defined the United States of America. That's what our government is. That's our Constitution. That's generally how the country operates. It's the Anglo-Protestant work ethic. People take pride in their work. Things like that, sort of a puritanical view of morality. I think all of that is fine. You know, I'm basically American in characteristics and so on. I think everybody, every probably multi-generational American is Anglo-Protestant in their culture. It doesn't necessarily mean being Protestant. It doesn't necessarily mean like going to a Protestant church. It means a lot of those cultural things that I think define the country for probably the first like 200 years. So when I say that the normative American culture should be Anglo-Protestant, well, you know, obviously it is a more individualistic nation. It is a nation that is oriented around work and also around faith. You know, faith is a big, important part for Protestants. And obviously, you know, Catholics are faithful too. So I don't think there's a lot of, you know, say, given your faith, I don't think there's a lot of areas where it clashes. Tim says, Maine has the highest population of whites and the lowest crime rate in the U.S. Coincidence? Wow, earth-shattering take. Girth says, Tucker is very base. Did you see he said that he wished more Americans had Henry Ford's values? Hello, base department, plan status, trusted. Yeah, Tucker's our guy. We know that. Big Age says, my aunt is a lab coat who wants my beliefs to be a phase. Keep doing God's work, King. Who cares? It's your aunt. Of course, it's the aunt, right? Believe Women says, what's wrong with weaponized autism? Also, someone needs to talk more about this Democrat violence problem. Laughing emoji. Yeah, you're right. Bob says, the consume product, get excited for next product meme is very white-pilling. It means people are deprogramming themselves from the corporate Borg. I don't really like the meme. I think it's kind of like lame. Strong One says, you've had so much success and I'm wondering when the Sam Hyde collab is coming. Yeah, okay. Harris says, Treader, Paisano, glad to see my homie doing well. Yeah, Treader's a base greaseball. Second Account says, one of the biggest factors in elections is charismatic leaders. If the left had a funny, good-looking guy who sounded normal, I believe he would be in serious trouble. Yeah, you're right about that. Sodomite says, thoughts on the Mediterranean, Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't know who that is. FF says, Franson's take on the bald, glowing amphetamine goblin was piping hot. Your patience communicating with that lobotomized degenerate was saintly. Well, yeah, thanks. I'm a very patient guy. Moist John says, imagine being... Whoops, scroll down too far. I just became a very impatient guy, actually. Just in that instant. Where was I? Moist John says, imagine being an anti-socialist economically and not understanding that the social policy is how they gain power. They legitimize the degenerates who want to take down the oppressive structures. Yeah, that's true. Bethicus has had a great convo about kitchens in Milo's comment section. We femoids are craving it at this point. Feminism was a ridiculous move. Rock on, Knickers. Well, thanks. Glad we have a sane and sound woman, but I don't know what you're doing in the comment section. Sheriff Bill says, last I checked, the comment section is not the kitchen, you know. She says, we women are craving the kitchen. Well, I think you're lost because you're in the comment section. No, I'm just having a little laugh, just a little gentle ribbing. Sheriff Bill says, ever seen that video where the goldfish is chopped up in a blender? No. Mr. Anonymous says, hey, Nick, ever think of a streaming project? Of streaming project Zomboid? I don't know what that is. Mark says, the two dim axes can be tricky since some people like to lump neocon military aggression with social conservatism. Yeah, but I just don't include that. Professor Eric says, bull moose mode, yeah. Pepe says, Nick, what I can't understand is how most people live their lives conservatively but don't vote accordingly. Well, most people aren't very, introspective when it comes to these things. I think most people, for them, voting identity is much more a cultural expression or environmental, as a result of environmental influences than it is of, like, people meditating on, like, their thoughts about politics and their priorities and so on, right? So, in a lot of places, like, you look at the West and the Northwest in America, like Montana, or in the Midwest and, like, North Dakota, in a lot of these states, the Democratic Party is very different than, like, our conception of it today. Like, the Democratic Party for them, for decades, fought for unions and certain industries, like mining and certain parts of agriculture. And so, for them, the Democratic Party is, it's, like, a much bigger deal. It's much more... It's a lot less to do with, like, a lot of where they are ideologically. It's not the party of Hillary Clinton for them. For them, it's the party that fought for their ancestors, you know, rights and all this as workers and so on. So, party identity is sort of a complicated thing like that. A white guy named Jamal says, lost out in a sales position to a less qualified black femoid today. That's Detroit for you. Black pills everywhere, boys. Stay strong. I mean, that's everywhere, but... Yeah, Anon says, okay, but a teensy little bit of catboys just once? Well, maybe just once. No, disavow. Mr. Woman says, permission to make fart noises with my mouth? Okay. El Rubio says, if demographics is destiny, how did a white Christian supermajority in the U.S. lead to mass immigration? Well, of course, what we mean by demographics is destiny is that if a white country votes in non-white people create a destiny of a low standard of living. When the country was Christian and white, the country was doing good because the demographics were, you know, in accordance with certain outcomes. Now that we have new people, we will have different outcomes. I don't know how you think that's like a huge own or something. If demographics is destiny, well, yeah, I mean, sure, people can make mistakes, but the reason why mass immigration is problematic is because the people that are coming here will have they will create a bad standard of living. Whether or not, you know, let's say in a vacuum, if white people voted for mass immigration from Europe, you would still have a good standard of living, right? And you could say that even if white people are liberal and they're voting for these things, you know, let's say that if people voted for mass immigration in 100 years, if the people that lived in that next 100 years were people that favored mass immigration, but you just didn't have it yet, it would still have the same standard of living. Do you know what I mean? So if ostensibly it's liberals that are voting for mass immigration, white liberals are not creating the bad standard of living, right? I mean, we know that. So it's a very, this question, obviously, you're just missing the point. Mark Williams says, there is no salvation outside the Catholic Church, and all non-Catholics will be condemned. Pray the rosary daily, and may the chastisement come soon. Research Our Lady of Fatima. Okay, thanks. Fran says, how many Hail Marys to repent for cringe? Super chat. I don't know. RJ says, which e-girl would you have cook the other two into a nice dinner for you and Jake? It's just dumb. Yeet Skeeterson says, I'm getting too red-pilled by, you know, I just can't stand it when people are like, we're all going to be funny now. We're all going to be funny. Haha, well, we're having this silly joke about a desert island. Well, who would you have cooked it? Just shut up. It's done. We had a laugh about it. We were there, you know, okay? We're beating a dead horse now. Please, can we move on? Can I just move on with my life? Yeet Skeeterson says, I'm getting too red-pilled by looking up some of the stuff you say on DuckDuckGo. Also, do you prefer Norm Macdonald stand-up or in the old SNL? I don't know. I just watch the clips from Not Norm. ASAP says, I intern with a Florida State rep, a Republican near Palm Beach. How can I get an invite to your event? Turning Point reached out to me. I turned it down. Or should I go? Get VIP for free. Well, look, you have to apply for the Groyper Leadership Summit. The information's on the flyer. And we'll review your application. And if we like you, then you can get in. But there's no, I can't really do much for you, big guy. Mark Williams says, the normative American culture should be Catholic, not Protestant. Protestantism is an abomination to God. All Protestants are condemned. No salvation. Okay. All right. Missing the point department. Mr. Rhett Sims says, I attended Catholic school and we visited a synagogue for a class trip once. I was a kid, so I don't remember much other than every single thing about it was creepy AF. Don't think I got diddled, though. Okay. Harold says, can you shout out my son, Zachary? He turns 14 tomorrow. He has also recently discovered your rant on the moon and it being gay. He loves it. Thanks. Well, yeah, shout out to Zach. Happy birthday. Hope it's a good one. Glad you like the show. Omega King says, Culpy is lying about me in your text messages. Okay. Let's see. It looks like we have one more super chat from Anon who says, okay, smelly Taco Bell diarrhea. Thanks for that. Okay, that's our last Super Chat. That's going to do it for us tonight. Remember to sign up for the email list. We don't know how much longer we have on the show because of a change in community guidelines in terms of service. You're familiar with the situation. We don't know how much longer we have. We could have a long time. We could, you know, be out of business tomorrow. You never know. Knock on wood, we hope we have a long time, but we know that day may come soon. So if you want to find me after, if anything happens, be sure to sign up on my email list. It's nicholasjfuentes.com. There should be a pop-up. You put your email in. If there's not a pop-up, you go into the top left-hand corner of the webpage, put your email in there. You can also follow me on Telegram, t.me/nickjfuentes1. Remember to subscribe to the channel. Give me a big thumbs up. Leave a comment down below. Click the notification bell to get notified every time I go live. Remember, we are on the air Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm Nicholas J. Fuentes. As always, thanks for watching. Thanks to the Super Chatters. Really great job tonight. Thanks to everybody that watches the show. We love you. And I will see you tomorrow. Until then, have a great rest of your evening.